Welcome to the Don't Panic Radio Show. I'm Steve Benson. That's Paul Schultz. And nothing you're about to hear is true. Today on our show, which is a new milestone, it's our sesquicentennial show, episode 150, and we have a very straightforward couple of things, and we're gonna just rock your world today. We're gonna talk about Black Lightning. We're gonna talk about 80s shows that were terrible. We'll talk about a 90s show that was awesome.
Okay.
And we'll talk about how people's taste can be so different from each other, even though they're good friends. It's weird. Like one could think one way about a show and the other one could be absolutely completely wrong. And I think that'll be a good show, don't you?
Hopefully it won't be our last.
Yeah, right? It's going to be like Paul starts his own show, and then I have my own show.
We rip on each other constantly.
Yeah, we'll be like Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer. Uh-huh. We'll just go off on our own.
What a top.
The other day, I wake up, and for some reason, I had the general and special relativity in my head, and I couldn't shake it. Like, I was trying to figure out if I'm on a, like they say, the speed of light really isn't the speed of light. It's a cosmic speed limit. It says that nothing can go faster than this speed. Light, which is made up of massless photons, happens to go that speed because doesn't have mass, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're basically saying anything with any mass at all can't go as fast as light can go, right? The only way you can go that fast is if you don't have any mass. There are other things like electromagnetism and a few other things that are that fast because they don't have mass, right? But the general thing is it doesn't matter. You can never go faster than that. So then you go, well, what about relativity? What if I'm on a train going faster than light? All right. What if I'm on a train that's near the speed of light, let's say? And then another train's coming the other direction, and it's also going near the speed of light. Wouldn't it look faster than the speed of light to me? And I woke up with this thought thinking, but I thought it didn't matter what your frame of reference was. Nothing can go faster than the speed of light. Problem is I had that wrong. Yes, it would look faster than the speed of light to me if I'm on the train, right? If I'm going 75% of the speed of light and he's going 75% of the speed of light, he's going to look like to me he's going 1.5 times the speed of light. Problem is, by any objective reference point that we both use, he's not going faster than the speed of light.
Right.
Right? So that's what that's the explanation of that. It took me 2 days and countless Wikipedia articles to figure that out. I probably just could have gotten on to Neil deGrasse Tyson's Twitter account and probably figured it out faster. But
well, you know, that you were distracted by Pornhub, so
it's true. It's hard to get on the internet without going to Pornhub.
It's like going to Walmart. I'm only going there for one thing, you know. Next thing you know.
Oh, I get it.
Next thing you
right,
know,
you can't get out of you can't get out of Walmart or Target. For us, it's Target. Mm. I mean, we're middle class. I mean, we go to Target. Okay. So I just pissed off most of our listeners. Probably the rich ones are going, huh, who would go to Target?
the rich ones that listen to our podcast.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay, so last week. Somehow, I forget how it came up. How did Magnum PI come up last week?
They announced, CBS announced they were going to reboot the series.
Oh, that's right. And you were bummed.
I was disgusted. Yes.
And before you had a chance to tell me that you liked the show,
I thought it was implied in my post.
I was like, Why would they reboot that piece of shit? Oh, maybe it'll be better.
I read that as sarcasm when you posted it. Because I'm like, clearly my post shows that I'm a fan. And so.
That's what it was. Okay, so here's the thing. All right. So I thought, well, maybe I'm misremembering. Maybe I have some bad associations. Maybe, you know, maybe I was molested during an episode of Magnum P.I. or something. You know, and I have this weird association with it.
Sure.
Who knows? But anything's on the internet these days. Mm-hmm. So I could go back and watch. And I I asked my wife, I was like, do you mind if we watch a few episodes of Magnum P.I.? She's like, are you kidding? Who are you asking? Yeah, put the mustache one on.
See, I knew I liked your wife for a reason.
She's like, especially Higgins. I'm like, okay. All right. Here we go. So we watched the pilot?
Don't Eat the Snow in Hawaii.
I can't get over how clever that is. Okay. So I feel like an explanation is in order. Okay, first of all, the idea of a guy, a special forces dude from Nam, coming back to the world and becoming a private investigator, great premise. Makes total sense to me. Okay. I don't know who this Robin Masters person is and why Magnum P.I. is staying there. I get why Higgins is there, although I don't know why Higgins, who was a decorated British soldier, right?
Yep.
Total badass. Yep. Is now the caretaker and like mows the lawn and feeds the dogs. I don't get why that's a thing, right? You are in the jungle, right? Chasing Charlie around the jungle. You were some kind of sergeant or something. You were
He was a sergeant major.
Right. Yeah. Hey, sergeant major, responsible for hundreds of people, not to mention keeping the lieutenants in line who didn't know what they were doing, right? That's every movie I've ever seen. Proves that out. And then you come back to the world, and you're like, so what are you going to do now? Start a business? Maybe a coaching program? Maybe gym? Start a gym? Something like that? No, I think I'll go be a nanny. I'll house sit for some guy that nobody knows what he does, like who he is. And then how does Magnum P.I. end up there? I watched the pilot, and I still don't know.
First of all, everyone knows who Robin Masters is, but nobody has seen him. Robin Masters is the equivalent of, like,
Hugh Hefner?
No, who's the guy that wrote the James Bond book? Ian Fleming.
Ian Fleming,
yes.
Yeah.
He's like Ian Fleming, Michael Crichton, all them, the big name, the big mystery type writer guys. He's huge, okay. But no one has ever seen him. And I don't know if I should spoil it for you or not, but Higgins is actually Robin Masters. He's using it as a cover. He's using the majordomo position that he has on the Robin's Nest as...
Wait, majordomo, what? What's a majordomo?
Basically, he runs everything. He's in charge of everything.
Is that what major...
Well, that's what Magnum calls him a lot. Is
majordomo?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, the reason why Magnum shows up is Magnum takes the job as head of security at the Robin's Nest. Which is what that whole thing is called. So basically, it's a plot device so that he can pretty much freeload and do whatever he wants and have his half-assed private eye, you know, job and be in one of what is apparently one of the most beautiful places on the earth.
He gets to drive that Ferrari around.
Which he always gets taken away from him. It's not his. He doesn't make nearly enough money to drive that thing.
But he gets to drive it, though.
Yeah.
He's always driving it.
He gets to take it away a lot. So.
Okay, so I'm like three episodes in. Mm-hmm. I intend to keep watching.
Okay.
I will keep watching, because it could be, I will admit, that this could be a leftover vestige of my misspent youth, where all I remember about the show, and there have been a few things already, okay, mm-hmm. That reminded me of how terrible 80s television was.
80s television was abominable.
So Tom Selleck's walking along the beach. Why are there hot stewardesses staying at at the Master's Estate, right? They're just guests. Like, oh, you're going to be a guest. At the same time that we have this Brigadier General from the British Army, he's going to come stay here too, and we're just going to have a couple of random stewardesses stay here. And they did the thing that all the 70s and 80s movies do, which the James Bond movies do the same thing, and it bugs me when they do it. Mm-hmm. It's like if there's a hot chick, the man is going to kiss them at some point.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
During this day and age, with the hashtag Me Too, right, to send the message that if there's a good-looking man somewhere, anywhere within, you know, a 50-mile radius, if there's a good-looking man and you're a reasonably attractive chick, the thing that needs to happen is you need to kiss him at some point. I can tell you, I could list every woman I've ever kissed, right? I could sit here and we could kind of come up with, and I could tell you every woman I've ever kissed. And these guys, there's no way they could do it because they kiss every woman they ever meet.
I couldn't do it. Just saying.
What do you walk around just like, oh, there's a hot chick. I think I'm going to end up kissing her.
Well, if I save her life, yes. Or if I'm guarding her from terrorists and things, it's going to happen. It's a natural chain of events.
That flies in the face of the entire Me Too movement, right? Why is it the man, why is it the woman wants to kiss the man that saves her life? The man ought to be wanting to kiss the woman that saved his life.
Oh, I'm sure he wants to kiss her too.
Well, she didn't save his life.
A couple of them do. The thing about Magnum P.I., here's the thing. When I told you earlier that it takes at least the first season for them to even figure out what they're doing with the show, the reason why that was because initially the show was supposed to be in like Hollywood or Los Angeles or something like that, and the premise, because he was like one of the McDonald's characters, the premise got completely changed over in a hurry to reshoot it in Hawaii. So they were making shit up as they were going along. It isn't until they established the characters of Magnum and TC and Rick, who I couldn't stand in the pilot, because it's like, oh, he's Humphrey Bogart from Casablanca, and I hated it. Plus, he did a terrible Humphrey Bogart impression. They had all these characters, Higgins, the dogs, you name it. And they didn't know what to do with them, so they were trying to develop the characters for them. And so season one is a bit of a wreck. The reason why, and Tom Selleck's acting is pretty bad, because he hadn't done a whole lot of acting up until that point. He was a model for some. My sister's screaming at her MP3 player right now. Or device, because she would know. He was a model. He'd been in a couple really bad movies. He'd made a couple of half-ass attempts at Western. So he made a failed pilot with Jerry Reed, which you have to see. I'll find my copy of it and mail it to you. I don't even remember the name of it right now, but it was a really bad pilot. And then Magnum happens, and it catches on like crazy. But they, like I said, they had the pilot. The pilot was good. Then what do you do now? They had to make all this stuff up as they were going along. By the time the second season rolls around, they kind of got a better rhythm going and the characters are established. And then things start to get really good.
Well, I have to say, you've really shut me down in terms of saying it was a crappy show. Season one is horrible. They didn't know what they were doing. Nobody's a good actor. And they didn't know what any of the characters were supposed to do. So if you can muddle through season one, it'll be a great show. Maybe I should skip season one. Maybe I should just...
You know what?
Maybe I should start watching season two.
To my recollection, there's one good episode, I think, in season one where that involves... was a Masada team, I think was what they were called. There was a good episode with that. But yeah, overall, they're pretty disposable. And I'd go ahead and skip to season two.
I love the acting of that girl, though. She's like,
oh, she was terrible.
Like, that was really scary when they were shooting at me. I was really scared. I wasn't sure what to do. Now, kiss me. Maybe drop a digit through my bikini bottom.
Drop a digit through my... Yeah, yeah. It was bad. It was bad.
It was really bad. Especially her knowing that she's undercover. Spoiler alert.
40 years
she's
later.
She's undercover. She's got no real connection to any of this anyway. What does she care, right? Anyway, time to move on to a good show.
Well, hold on. I'm not done yet.
Oh.
To Magnum's credit, okay, one more thing that makes Magnum P.I. one of the coolest things ever. Up until that point, when that show came out, Vietnam veterans, which is what he was, him, Rick, and TC, they were all Vietnam veterans. To that point, Hollywood portrayed Vietnam vets in a negative stereotype. They were psychopaths, they were killers, they were, you know, just generally horrible, messed up people. Well, due to Magnum P.I.'s positive portrayal of a Vietnam veteran, that red Hawaiian shirt that he wears is in the Smithsonian because of his portrayal of a Vietnam veteran.
That's cool. I like that.
Yeah. Just skip ahead to season two. Now, off air, I'll give you some titles of some of the best episodes. I know you liked the Vietnam stuff. I'll give you the titles of some of the best episodes that if you just get sick of it and you just want to fast track to them, they're amazing.
as long as we're off air,
yeah.
And not that I ever want to be anything but totally honest with the listeners. After watching a few episodes, I didn't actually hate it as much as I remembered hating it. I was like, okay, now wait a minute. And I thought, well, how funny would it be if this could be a bit that goes on for a few weeks? And if I do skip to season two and they're better, right?
Mm-hmm.
The pilot was pretty good. Episode one was not too bad. Even the one with the girl
mm-hmm.
with the horrible acting, it wasn't too bad. There was some Vietnam stuff in there and things, you know. And I'm starting to go, okay, maybe the show isn't as bad as I've been making it out to be. And it might be kind of a fun little bit that goes for a few weeks.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm fine with that.
I mean, we're just talking about TV, right?
That's right.
So, it's not that big a deal.
Change the channel, Marge!
Here's a question.
Hmm.
What do you have against Seinfeld?
I have absolutely nothing against Seinfeld.
Okay.
But my point was, the comment that I made about how it took, you know, the same thing held true for Seinfeld. Season one of Seinfeld is damn near unwatchable.
Mm.
Because, again, they had no idea what they were doing. They were making that shit up. It took them a while to establish the characters. There were some funny moments. Like, you know, the episode where Kramer pretends to be the cop to steal the statue from the guy that cleaned George's house, and when George and Jerry go to meet Elaine's dad, who was played by Lawrence Tierney, which was really funny, but it was not even close to as funny as it was by season two.
I don't know if I've seen season one. I didn't even find out about the show until probably three seasons in.
Mm.
You know, so I'm not, you know, you're probably right.
Well,
that.
There is one episode that might be of particular interest for you where his girlfriend, you know, Jerry's girlfriend for like an episode or two was Tawny Kitaen.
Oh.
And he has a battle of wills with his libido. It's pretty funny. But overall, yeah.
I love it.
Season one was not as good as the rest of the other nine seasons or however long it lasted.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. We've talked about this a lot. Curb Your Enthusiasm
mm-hmm.
is we have watched every episode of that thing, and it's now in season nine, I think.
Yeah.
Nine or ten?
Yeah, I think it's nine or ten. You've been talking
about it. Oh, my God, man. I laugh continuously through the whole thing. And it's Larry David, who was co-creator Seinfeld, mm-hmm. along with Jerry Seinfeld. And I think it was around season three, maybe, that he and his wife, Larry David and his wife, it's a weird show because his name in the show is Larry David.
Mm-hmm.
His real name is Larry David.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, and he has other characters like Ted Danson is in it. And Ted Danson is Ted Danson.
Right.
Lewis, something Lewis, his name, a comedian, Robert Lewis. No, I can't think of his name, but anyway, he's in it and he's him. Right. So they have these characters that are who they are,
mm-hmm.
but then like Jeff, what's his name from the Goldbergs?
Which character is he?
The dad.
I don't remember what his name is offhand.
He's in there playing Jerry's manager. So he's not him. He's not himself.
Right.
His wife isn't his real wife. So it's really funny because when he was asked about, well, what is the show? Like in the show, he's Larry David, creator of Seinfeld. And he's got all this money and he doesn't have to do anything because he's rich, but he does have all these side projects going. And he said, well, he said, this isn't exactly how my life goes, but he said, this is how my life would go if I didn't have any social filters whatsoever. And he said, by the way, that's who George Costanza is.
Right.
George Costanza is me if I had no social filters. And when you watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, he might as well be George Costanza. Because all the shit that goes on.
The episodes that I've seen, I haven't watched a lot of them, but because you keep messaging me about it, I'm going to go back and watch them. The episodes I've seen, that's the impression I got was that he was, you know, he was another George Costanza. Then I'm like, wait a minute, David and Seinfeld are friends. Chances are, you know,
yeah.
There's a connection there.
So Jerry Seinfeld played Jerry Seinfeld and Jason Alexander played Larry David.
Right.
They just called him George Costanza.
Mm-hmm.
So at about season three, it wasn't long after Katrina, mm-hmm. you know, all those people lost their homes and all that. A bunch of them went to Houston, African American families of color are going, you know, staying at different people's houses and stuff, right? Till they get back on their feet. Well, Larry David's a liberal, right?
And mm-hmm.
He's a liberal in like name, and he wants to be a liberal, but he's super self-centered.
Yeah.
But he's like, oh, we got to take in one of these families, right? And so they take in one of the families, and one of the people who's like somebody's brother or brother-in-law or something, it's unclear how he's related,
mm-hmm.
is J.B. Smoove. And he moves in, and it's hilarious because this family, it's just because Larry has no social filters, so he can be racist, he can be, you know, and then it's just like all these things that are super insensitive and all this, and it's funny how he interacts with the family. And he hates him, and like he just wants him out of there so he can have his life back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the family has enough, and they're just like, we're moving out. Right? We found another house in Houston or somewhere else. We're moving out. He's like, oh yeah, sorry about that. Okay, well, yeah, we'll miss you. I mean, it's funny, you know, and they leave. He sees it. They get in the car and drive off, and he's like, like relieved, right? About that moment, here comes J.B. Smoove walking up the sidewalk with a box, like one of those Chinese food takeout boxes, you know,
yeah.
with some chopsticks. And he walks up and Larry looks at him. He's like, oh, you're not going with them? He's like, no, man, I ain't going with them. He's like, oh, so what are you going to do? He goes, I'm going to go up to my motherfucking room and eat my fucking Chinese food. That's what I'm going to do. And he just walks up there. That was the end of the episode. And he has been in the show the rest of the time.
Yeah, I've seen a couple with him in it, actually. I actually started watching it when I found that he was on it, so.
Oh, yeah.
That particular episode, but yeah.
He could just stand there and I'd laugh.
Yeah.
Not that he looks funny, but he's just got this whole attitude that's just funny as hell.
Here are your names. Mr. Brown. Mr. White. Mr. Blonde, Mr. Blue, Mr. Orange, Mr. Pink.
Why am I Mr. Pink?
Because you're a faggot, all right?
Welcome back to the Don't Panic Radio Show. That discussion about 80s shows was fun and everything. Conflict is good, right? But at the end of the day, Paul and I love each other dearly. And we just want you listeners to know, sometimes grown-ups fight.
Mom and Dad aren't going to get divorced.
That's right. And even if we did, it wouldn't be your fault, and we would still love you, even though we would probably try to use you to gain some sort of advantage over the other one. But don't let that make you think it's actually your fault, okay? All right. Having said that, but I did want to remind our listeners why it is that you have to avoid getting into any kind of discussion whatsoever at all with anybody ever on Facebook about anything.
Why is this not the topic of the show? So I think you just opened up a can of worms.
Well, I have one specific story, and it's part of, okay, half of why I was late tonight was finishing up episode 3 of Black Lightning.
Mm-hmm.
The other half was responding to a person, logic-challenged person, and logic and fact-challenged person on Facebook, right? I thought it would be fine because it had nothing to do with politics, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't recognize until it was too late was I was dealing with, I don't know if she is an anti-vaxxer, but she definitely has all the traits of an anti-vaxxer.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I didn't realize that until too late, right? And here was the moment that I should have stopped. And I kind of, it's not like I kept going forever. I stopped pretty soon after that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's when she, first of all, I never heard this before in my life, but apparently people are blaming Tamiflu for causing their teenagers to kill themselves. Okay. Tamiflu is the drug. If you're getting influenza and okay, retards, I'm not talking about the stomach flu. That's a misnomer. That has nothing to do with influenza.
No.
The stomach flu is probably that Chinese food you ate last night. It has nothing to do with the influenza A, B, C, all the way. Nothing. Nothing to do with influenza. All right. That having been said, we're talking about influenza. Tamiflu, if you catch it in the first couple of days, you take Tamiflu, you're going to have the flu for a couple of days less than you would have. Mm-hmm. Right? Apparently, there's this story out there that has legs, this urban legend, that Tamiflu causes teenagers to kill themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Where that came from is, sit down, you're going to be shocked, Japan. Apparently, a few people reported that, you know, I put my kids on Tamiflu and they killed themselves. Like, somewhere between 2 and 12, depending on who you believe.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that they failed to take into account is, you know what else can cause neurological effects? Influenza can cause neurological effects, mm-hmm. right? So they've done study after study, and what they've shown is if you're on Tamiflu, you're less likely to have one of these psychotic events that people have when they're on the flu,
mm-hmm.
which makes sense because if you have the flu 2 days less, then that's two fewer days that you can have a psychotic event, right?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know any of this, all right? 2.5 minutes before I wrote it in the comments on her post, where she was freaking out because somebody, like the local Fox channel, reported that some family's kid killed himself, and they're blaming Tamiflu, right? She's like, this is just sad. And then, of course, you know, the comments underneath get into the, well, are you sure it's that? And she's like, absolutely, it's that. You know it's that. Like, and I just posted, I was like, took 2.5 minutes to go. I went to the CDC website. I went to the FDA website. I went to another news article about the Japan stuff. I was like, oh, this is all bullshit. Japan banned it for teenagers as a political thing. The head guy in Japan, who's the head flu-fighting guy in the government, said, well, there's no science really to back up this ban, but, you know, politically we kind of have to do it because there's been these reported deaths.
Mm-hmm.
Can't really. And so they did this huge study, and they showed, no, there's no evidence that links the Tamiflu to the thing. In fact, if you're taking Tamiflu, you're less likely to kill yourself. So I just posted that very factually. No opinions. You know, I said, but you need to do whatever you're comfortable with for your kids. I totally get that. I'm just posting this as informational only, right? Huge mistake.
Never introduce facts into those yeah. kind of debates.
Yeah. So she was like, oh, well, of course there's no evidence connecting Tamiflu to any problems. There never is there? They never make a connection with the drugs and stuff. I'm like, well, one example is Vioxx. There's probably numerous other examples that I don't have time to go look up, but there's been a lot of drugs pulled off the market because they've established a connection through evidence that there was a problem. Okay? You could go Google it, or you can look at the FDA's website if you want. Now, here's the point at which I should have known better.
And it was, wait, hold on. I'm Morgan Freeman. And it was at that point that Steve realized he should have known better.
I'd like to think Steve fought the good fight. Her reply was, well, I don't consider the FDA website to be a credible source of information.
This ties into our definition of theory.
Yeah. Credible. You keep using that word. I don't think it means anything to me. So in a very nice way, I said, well, if you don't trust the information on the FDA's website, I'm not sure what research you can do. I'm not sure what you would believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, as you're doing your research, websites like the FDA or CDC, you know, you may not believe them. But I wouldn't get your information from a sensationalist news website either, right? She's like, you don't know me. You don't know where I get my information. I'm like, the link you posted is from Fox 59. Anyway, you little leaguers out there, don't do it. So what did I do? What have I said, kids? What have I said to do every time you have the urge to reply? I finally went and I did this. I unfollowed the person. I didn't unfriend her. I didn't block her. I didn't rage quit. I didn't have any over-the-top reaction. I just went, I clicked that little thing. It said unfollow, still be friends, but don't see her posts. Problem solved.
It's the most passive way to win an argument on Facebook is just to unfollow somebody.
It's the passive without the aggressive.
Exactly. I actually broke up with a girl when I found out. It's like an episode of Seinfeld. Speaking of which, you know.
Oh, that's Curb Your Enthusiasm.
We got together, you know, stuff happened, life, you know, and then one day we were talking and she started talking about how vaccinations cause all these things, and I just remember all I heard was like, bah, 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 bah. Like the Seinfeld music, you know, like a segue to, like, you know, I'd be talking to you on the, yeah, and I broke up with her because she's an anti-vaxxer. She's an anti-vaxxer? She's an anti-vaxxer. It was like, suddenly everything, it was just, like, I couldn't believe it. I'm just like, check, please. I was,
you're like, why didn't I see this coming?
Then, of course, I'm also thinking, man, she touched stuff in my house. I gotta go home and, you know, burn that stuff because I don't want that herd immunity to be messed up.
I'm gonna get polio. Let's talk about Black Lightning. We pray at night for the helpless. Pray at night. Hoping you get us through breakfast. Hoping. Wishing somebody come save us. Black Lightning's back. Come to shock the haters. All right, man. Who goes first? Do you want the non-comic book guy or the comic book guy?
Well, I think what we work best is you say a lot of stuff and then I interject.
You just summed up the show. Hey,
maybe we might have something there.
This is listener X talking to friend. Hey, you should check out Don't Panic Radio Show. It's a good show. Oh, yeah, what is it? Well, the one guy says a bunch of stuff, then the other guy interjects. That sounds like a good show. All right, well, I got to tell you, the show continued to deliver for me. Episode 3 delivered, continued to deliver what I've come to expect from the show after only 2 episodes. More, like, family drama. So, here's the thing. Andy A. William Wright was complaining about how all the, like, I don't watch all the superhero movies, right? Mm-hmm. I watch this one. But he was complaining about how the, like, every superhero movie has a whiny woman, like, trying to convince the superhero not to do the things that we really want the superhero to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you should watch Black Lightning. And he's like, oh. Well, that's the show that caused me to post this. He's like, I was like, what? What? and so he was taking umbrage with What's her name? I don't know the characters' names. With Lynn. The wife.
Who? Yeah, Lynn.
Lynn. He's taking umbrage with Lynn, struggling with like. So my point was, and I wrote this out, I was like, no, I think Black Lightning, I think Jefferson Pierce struggles, right?
Yes.
Because family is, and he said it in this episode, he's like, the three of you are my top priority. His family is his top priority, right? And he also wants to save the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he won't save the world if it means sacrificing his family. But guess what? His family's part of the world, right? So what I think her character is doing is she is voicing a lot of his concerns, right? So she's like the alter ego, like she represents all of the struggles we all have with, we want to change the world, but we also got these day-to-day things that we got to take care of, right? And I didn't see that as whiny at all. And I'm just like, she's a strong, powerful African-American woman of color. And she is voicing her opinion. It didn't seem whiny to me. And she didn't try real hard to get him not to do the things we want him to do. Right? She wasn't trying real hard. She's struggling too, because she wants the family to be intact. She also is seeing that, well, keeping the family intact might mean Black Lightning saving the world.
Yeah.
You know?
It's a very complex plot. The characters are, no one is any 100% one direction. They have all these, you know, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for. They've got all these like obstacles in the way. They've got all these inner turmoils in the way, and they're trying to figure out what to do next is what it seems like to me. And every time they do one thing, it almost like exacerbates something else. But it's like, do we keep going with this, or do we, you know, stop? At the end of the episode, when they're all hugging and everything, and he's like having the whole, you know, crisis, and the woman on television, she's like, you know, he's gonna save us. And I'm just like, man, there's no pressure there. This poor guy just, you know, went through all this, and he's, you know, all, so it's like every time they make a little bit of headway on something, there's like 10 other obstacles in the way.
Well, and I love the scene where they're marching, and he jumps out, stops the dude with the automatic machine gun. And it's like, oh, Black Lightning, he saved us. And then two people get shot.
Yeah.
Right? Like, with life-threatening injuries. And Black Lightning's not all bad. So you're right. When you said that, I was like, oh, you're right. Like, the expectation is he's going to save us. Right? He can do anything. Well, he can't do anything. He wasn't able to prevent, you know, the Reverend and the kid from getting shot. Right?
Right.
This is, all right, I'm not racist, but, I don't mean to sound racist, but, and this is probably going to sound racist, the guy.
I'll take things that Poppy says for 500.
But here's the problem, yeah. But here's the problem I have, right? The guy that Tobias picked to give the automatic rifle to and shoot up the crowd looked a lot like what's her name's cherry popper.
Yeah.
Okay, Khalil.
Yeah.
Not only did he look like him, because, you know, they're both black, but they were wearing similar colored clothes. I didn't mean to say colored. And I'm not saying they were wearing colored clothes. They were wearing normal white people, I mean, normal clothes that any race could wear. This is getting racist. All right, what I'm trying to say is, I spent a little bit of time wondering, is this her boyfriend?
Yeah, that would have been that would have been too cliche, honestly.
Probably, but, yeah. So what happened to that guy? Where's he?
Which guy?
The guy that did the shooting. How come we didn't see him getting...
I assume he's incarcerated.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. So anyway, that was a great scene because it showed, yeah, Black Lightning can do a lot, but mm-hmm. he's not all powerful. Now, I'm wondering if there's a connection between the spandex that his daughter was wearing and mm-hmm. the fact that she's starting to discover she's got some superpowers. Like, is she going to be... Like, is that going to be her costume? The spandex with the kitty ears?
No. Wait, what? I'm sorry. I watched that episode twice today.
How about that scene with the Asian girl and the spandex?
Yeah. Okay.
You look like an Instagram hoe.
You look like an Instagram hoe. Well, what's funny is, speaking of that, the faux Catwoman spandex latex outfit that she had on, I'm gonna meta a little bit,
right?
Because you know you're the non-comic guy, which still blows by. It's one of those things I never really thought about all the years we were growing up, that, like, you know, we're best friends and somehow you're not a comic guy.
Hey, I recently read Watchmen.
Yeah, well, that's a great start. But anyway, I'm gonna meta here a little bit because there's some things that you, as a comic book guy, right, and as a non-comic book guy, don't know.
You go meta. I understand. I mentioned hot black lesbian in spandex. You go meta. Then we'll come back.
I'm gonna have to. No. A couple things of interest was for me, because like I said, I watch these things and I find myself just like, I'm like a beautiful mind dude. I'm like, pick, you know, numbers and shapes are flashing in front of me. I can't watch anything without having that happen. But some things I thought were interesting was, okay, so she goes to the cosplay party at the bar, and the problem with that is, in order to, like, have a likeness of somebody who's an established property, there's a whole lot of legal BS and money you gotta pay. So they kind of, like, faked the Catwoman look for her, and they kind of fudged the superhero girl that the Asian chick was wearing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was funny. But it got me thinking about a lot of things, and one of the things I noticed was when she meets the Asian girl, and the Asian girl holds up the comic of The Outsiders in the library.
Okay.
I lost my shit because originally Black Lightning was a member of the Outsiders.
Oh, okay.
But he was a member of what they called, the title was Batman and the Outsiders. And what happened was, Batman put together a team of superheroes of his own and eventually left the group, and it became the Outsiders. And that incarnation, Black Lightning was a character. 10 years later, they relaunched it, and it was just called the Outsiders. But Jefferson Pierce was not a member. So this was their way of, like, holding up a comic that paid homage to Black Lightning, but didn't have to explain why her dad was on the cover of the comic book. The thing for me was, the guy that wrote The Outsiders and Batman and The Outsiders is Mike Barr, the same guy who I'm working on a comic proposal with. So it was like, I felt like Seinfeld. I felt like George Costanza. Worlds are colliding. I was just like, woo! I was tickled pink about it.
Uh-huh.
Also, I found out that you mentioned you couldn't remember what his ex-wife's name was. Her name is Lynn Stewart, and the reason why that's significant to comic book fans is, and I recently read this in an article, was when Tony Isabella, he used to work for Marvel back in the early 70s, he got hired in at DC, okay, One of the reasons why he got hired in at DC was they hired him because they wanted to create some of what is called the Marvel magic. Because DC was having real problems back then, and they couldn't compete with Marvel. And one of the things that Tony told them was, one of the things that makes Marvel stand out is the books, even though they're separate titles, they're intertwined in sometimes minor, sometimes major ways. So what he did, when he created Lynn Stewart, his Black Lightning's ex-wife, he wanted her to be the sister of Jon Stewart, not the former host of The Daily Show, but Jon Stewart was a member of the Green Lantern Corps. Hal Jordan being the most famous Green Lantern. Well, Hal Jordan took a hiatus. Jon Stewart, his best friend, filled in for him. So Lynn Stewart is actually Jon Stewart's sister. And I doubt very seriously if that'll play into the story of the Black Lightning TV show. But it was just like one of those things that, like, when I heard her last name, I'm like, wait a minute. I wonder, that's too much of a coincidence. But yeah. Lo and behold, all these decades later, that's actually what was going on. And unfortunately, the story never got to evolve because for whatever reason, Tony was either fired or forced off of Black Lightning, and it never got resolved. You can talk if you have a reaction to any of that.
No, it's why we love having you on the show. You're welcome anytime.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here. Was it just me, or you have two daughters, and I don't know how or if at all the sex talk has come up yet in your family. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve just put his hands in the air.
Let me just say that scene. I was like,
the fact that what killed me was, and this is every father's nightmare.
Yeah.
And it was portrayed perfectly because up until this point, you know, you thought of his daughter as, you know, kind of like a young woman, right?
Yeah.
When she sits down at the table and has the sex talk and she's got like the little girl puffs in her hair, there's no way that was accidental.
Yeah.
Because it was like the worst nightmare ever for the poor parents.
Well, I love this couple. Right, and I'm rooting for them to get back together, because how they handled that situation and how what was going through their head,
yeah,
is almost exactly how I would imagine us dealing with it.
Right. Well, I even had with my oldest, I had a similar conversation with her mom, and her mom's the one that, yeah, it's a mom thing apparently to take him to the doctor.
Well, that was the scene that I thought is, because you sent me a message said, oh, shit just got personal. I was like, is that the scene? It turns out it was way more meta than that. But but what they were saying is our philosophy completely, which is whatever they come to you with. Can't be forbidden. You cannot forbid them to come to you with stuff, right? Even shit like that you're kind of like, and the way they portrayed it was great, because it's like, yes, this is exactly how we would have wanted this to happen.
Yeah.
Right. Also, if she had decided. To save herself for marriage, and we were having that conversation, that would be good with us too, right? But since she didn't, and this is how we've raised her, and this is the part of my childhood that I think my parents have caught up now, but in my early adulthood, what they forgot was they raised me to become the person I became, right? Mm-hmm. They caused it all to happen, right?
It's their fault.
It's your fault I went to Germany, right? You're wondering why I would want to go to Germany instead of staying at home. Because you raised me to want to be an adventurous, like, want to see the world type of person. So you're wondering, you know, so the reason your daughter came to you to announce that she was going to have sex this Saturday, you know, and would be home by curfew, that's how you raised her.
Yeah.
And they had that conversation and they're like, wow, we didn't handle that very well. We just didn't say a word, because I'm sure all of that was going on in their head. They're like him especially, I'm sure he would have been like, you're grounded till two Olympics from now. I'm sure that was in his head, and he's like, but this is what we wanted. We didn't want her sneaking off and getting pregnant, right? This is what we wanted. But I don't know what to say.
I'm telling you, and you know this as well as I do, that kind of shit will turn around and bite you on the ass. It's been well established on the show that, like, in my family, you couldn't talk about anything. Mm-hmm. It was not even considered. You would just as soon die of embarrassment than talk about stuff. Because, you know, my parents were the children of depression surviving German immigrants, for lack of a better, you know, for a quick definition. They couldn't talk about anything, so we couldn't talk about anything. So when I started having kids, my thought was, I'm going to make myself 100% accessible to my kids. Well, that shit turns around and bites you on the ass. You know, so when they're little and you're holding them and you're telling yourself this, you've got to remember, this is a long con. You've got to make sure that when this shit comes down, you know, you're ready for it. But you never are.
Part of me, all right, so I'm kind of a hypocrite in that, yes, I want you to come to me with this stuff. Mm-hmm. Part of me wants them to have the goddamn common courtesy to sneak around behind my back. Be careful, right? Be smart. Don't get a disease or pregnant or anything, right? And don't let some guy fuck you over, right? Don't let him use you for sex and then dump you like a piece of trash, right? Mm-hmm. But part of me says, have at least make an effort to conceal it from me, right? At least play the game, like maintain the illusion for me and wear the white dress at the wedding so I can go, this is probably not her first, you know, lover, but I don't know that. You know what I'm saying? So it could be her first lover, you know? That's the game I play with my parents. Now, I'm sure my dad knows, right? My dad doesn't have the whatever thing you have in your brain that allows you to pretend something other than reality, right? He was born with a reality brain.
Yes,
his brain
yes,
only
he was.
Sees reality, right? And therefore, he probably knows when, how many times, and who. Right? Because he's like sitting back there, yep, I know that happened.
Mm.
My mom, however, even with my dad, with my mom, I've had the courtesy to allow them, they can choose to play the game or not. They can have the illusion or not. I've not done anything to disrupt that illusion. If my daughter comes to me and like even hints that she wants to talk about sex, I'm going to take this recording from this show. I'm going to play it for her. Starting about 4 minutes ago, up until now, I'm going to go, before you say anything, I want you to listen to this. I want you to think very carefully. And then you can go ahead and tell me what you were going to say or not. I'm sorry, what?
Hang on. Oh, man. I'm glad I'm not alone. Getting back. I have one more point about Black Lightning, and then we can be done with this.
Okay.
One of the cool things about the show is nobody on that show is perfect.
Right.
Okay. Now, as a dad, I found myself being extremely entertained when he confronts the kid about. Who wants to have sex with his daughter, how he takes a shower. And I started the first time I watched it, I'm like, what the fuck? I had the kid's reaction. What is he getting at with this? And then when he does the whole thing about, so you want to give my daughter athlete's foot in places where, you know, and he walks away and he's smiling. I'm like, he was being a complete asshole to that kid because he was trying to scare him.
On purpose.
On purpose. So nobody's perfect on that show. And that's one of the best things about it.
Yeah. It's a good show.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good show. And fortunately, the kid gets shot in the spine and will never walk again, which I've heard different accounts. It probably depends on what part of the spine. He may or may not be able to copulate.
Why is it both of our minds? I know why both of our minds went there, because we're dads of daughters.
He's like, am I out of the water? Am I out of the woods or not out of the woods?
One of my favorite things about our updates of anything is we don't really, whether we have a guest on the show or we're reviewing something, we come at it from some other angle than just, because we didn't actually review the episode. We just talked about shit that happened on the episode.
Let's review it real quick. It was good.
Yeah, I give it 2 thumbs up.
It's good. Had action, drama.
Awesome music.
Good music.
It started out with Aretha Franklin, for Christ's sake. You can't. Where are you going to go from there?
All right. Tell you what, man. That's a show.
That's a show.
For Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson, and nothing you just heard was true. 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 True.
What a time.